What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. We got a lot of things to talk about on tonight's episode. We got NFL Week 13 reactions. Going to be giving my thoughts on the Chiefs-Packers game that just got played. Broncos-Texans, the 49ers clobbering the Philadelphia Eagles. And then we also got some things to discuss when it comes to the college football playoffs. I'm going to be giving my early thoughts on the semifinal matchups. And did Florida State get screwed by the committee? You know, there's an old saying that goes, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And in a lot of you guys' eyes, I'm probably going to become the villain. But before we begin, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the podcast that's uploaded on the channel is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. Leave us with a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Share the podcast with your friends, family members, and acquaintances if you enjoy. And let's get into it. But before we do, shout out to everybody that's in the live stream, that's on the chat. Shout out to my guy, GCoffee223. He says, first, for what it's worth, your analysis is better than anyone I know of. I appreciate that. He says, I think you will tell me I'm going wrong, but I see the 49ers going 3-2 to close out the season. Eagles beat 49ers in Philly at home, unless 49ers play Rams. Cool, 4.1. I appreciate that, man. I don't think they're going to go 3-2 to end the season. I do think that the 49ers right now, they're playing some of their best football. And we're going to get into them. But first, the Green Bay Packers stunned the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. And I got some good and bad news. If you're a Packers fan, the good news is that Jordan Love has arrived. And the bad news is, if you're not a Packers fan, Jordan Love has arrived. He outplayed Patrick Mahomes tonight, people. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he was throwing dimes all night. I mean, he had a beautiful dot that he threw in the third quarter to Romeo Doubs in between 3 defenders. And then right after that, when you thought he couldn't get no better, he throws another dot to play after the Christian Watson for the touchdown. And how about this Green Bay Packers defense showing up? They actually found the way to slow down Patrick Mahomes late in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. So not only did Jordan Love have his coming out party, but Joe Barry finally found out how to call some damn good plays on defense, man. It's all coming full circle right now for the Green Bay Packers. You got Jordan Love playing his best football of the season. It's been a roller coaster ride watching this dude. The first 2 weeks of this season, he looked solid. And then after the first couple of games, he looked really bad. But over the last month, Jordan Love has been fucking balling, people. You know, you thought that his performance against the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving, it was just a one-time occurrence. But he's continued to maintain this level of high-level play. And if he continues this, you know, level of performance, there's no reason why the Packers aren't going to be in the playoffs. And I said this before the season, that if Jordan Love plays well, the Packers are going to be a playoff team. This team has way too much talent to miss out on the postseason as long as Jordan Love can play well. They got talent on defense. Rashawn Gary, he deserves to be in discussion for Defensive Player of the Year. He had a really good game. And when Green Bay is fully healthy, this is one of the more talented rosters in the NFC. But it all starts with Jordan Love. Jordan Love, the fact that he looked amazing tonight, the fact that he outplayed Patrick Mahomes is a large reason why Green Bay pulled off this upset. And initially, I didn't plan on watching this game because I thought Kansas City was going to win. I'm just going to be honest with you. I was not expecting Jordan Love to come out looking like the second coming of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. It looks like the Packers once again found another franchise quarterback. And it's astonishing because Green Bay, you know, this is a small market team. They don't have the luxury of being able to be attractive when it comes to signing big name free agents. As a matter of fact, Green Bay is probably the last place that any free agent will want to play in. But when you look at the fact that they've been able to nail and find the secret formula to developing and finding franchise quarterbacks, it's a big reason why this team is going to continue to be in the playoffs for years to come, despite the fact that they play in a small market. But when you are able to find ways to develop quarterbacks, you're always going to have an opportunity to not just be a playoff team year after year, but you're also going to be in the Super Bowl conversation. Now, I'm not saying that the Packers are in the Super Bowl conversation yet, but with the way that Jordan Love has improved over the course of this season, the Packers are playing some of their best football. And I tell you guys this nearly every time I go live. The real football season begins after Thanksgiving. After Thanksgiving is when teams start to separate themselves. And the Packers are starting to separate themselves from the rest of the pack. Look at the NFC North right now. The Detroit Lions look like they pretty much have this division on lock. There's a lot that needs to happen for Green Bay to retake this division. But it definitely looks like they got a great chance at being able to get the seventh seed in the NFC when you look at the fact that the Seattle Seahawks are in free fall mode. The LA Rams, they're getting kind of hot as well, along with you also. The Minnesota Vikings with Joshua Dobbs at quarterback. We don't know how long that thing is going to hold up. You got to be really happy and thrilled about the future of this organization with the way that Jordan Love has played over the last month. When we look at Kansas City, who is on the losing end of this thing, I never was thrilled about Kansas City getting rid of Tyreek Hill. Now, although they won the Super Bowl, I didn't think that them getting rid of Tyreek Hill was going to haunt them too bad. I thought that with Andy Reid being as good as an offensive mind as what he is and Patrick Mahomes being so great, they would be able to make up for it. But we're now starting to see the ramifications of that trade. And it's not looking pretty right now for Kansas City. They don't have any consistent wide receiver who you can look at and be like, yeah, like Mahomes, if Travis Kelce is in there, he has him to throw to. Kansas City's three best weapons are Travis Kelce, Isaiah Pacheco, and Rashee Rice. And that's who this offense pretty much runs through, these three players. And if you're able to slow down Travis Kelce, which Travis Kelce, let's be honest, he's starting to regress. He's not trash. He's not terrible. He's still arguably the best tight end in the game, but he's lost a step. And it has nothing to do with his relationship with Taylor Swift. The dude is 30-something years old, and he's even said a couple of weeks ago that he's thought about retirement. And in this game, we didn't really see Travis Kelce having one of those big-time performances that we've been accustomed to seeing now out of him over the last couple of years and these primetime matchups. Not only is this Kansas City Chiefs wide receiving core really, really terrible right now, but this offensive line doesn't look that good neither. This offensive line was getting worked by Green Bay's defensive line. Their offensive tackles are not good. Jerron Taylor, they overpaid for him in free agency. And same thing with Donovan Smith at left tackle. Like, they didn't overpay for him, but he's not serviceable enough to hold up in terms of them being able to make a deep playoff run. This Kansas City Chiefs team is the most vulnerable that we've seen them ever since Patrick Mahomes first became their starting quarterback. Yeah, we like to give them the benefit of a doubt because they have Travis Kelce, Mahomes, and the Big Red Machine. But losing to the Green Bay Packers tonight, regardless of how well Jordan Love played, is really concerning. And I've been saying this throughout the last couple of weeks of this season. Kansas City is not built to win a Super Bowl this year. I know when you look back on the New England Patriots dynasty with Tom Brady, they didn't always win Super Bowls being super stacked on offense. But when you look at the current state of the AFC, the best teams in this conference, not only do they have great quarterbacks, but they also have a lot of weapons around them. Look at Jacksonville. They got Calvin Ridley, Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram. The Baltimore Ravens have a lot of talent in the passing game for Lamar to throw the football to. Kansas City, they're going to make it to the playoffs, but they're not going to make it too far. And right now, there's a really big chance that they don't even get the one seed. And this game was huge in terms of them staying alive in that discussion. Because now the Miami Dolphins are over them for the one seed in the AFC. Same thing with the Baltimore Ravens. This is a game that you expected to win. And when you don't win games that you're expected to win, you find yourself in unfavorable situations down the stretch when it comes to playoff seeding. Kansas City, for the first time ever, we may see them play in the first round of the playoffs, and they may have to end up playing a road playoff game, something that has never happened during the Patrick Mahomes era. If you're a Chiefs fan right now, this game should make you start hitting that panic button. And before you say, man, JT, we're going to be good, it's just one-off game. No, it's not. You lost to Philadelphia. You lost to Green Bay. And then you got a date with the Buffalo Bills coming up, and there's a really big chance that you don't even win that game. Your offense is out of sorts. Your defense is battling a lot of injuries. Hell, you lost Nick Bolton. And then the backup linebacker who you have behind him, he got injured in this game, and you also lost the safety. So you're dealing with injuries on the defense side of the football. Your offense is lacking any true number one wideout outside of Travis Kelce. And even then, Travis Kelce is about 80% of what he has been in the past. Kansas City, it's time to hit the panic button on them. For Green Bay on the other end, you're peaking. And you're playing your best football. And if you continue to get this kind of performance out of Jordan Love when he's out playing guys like Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff, you mean to tell me that you don't think Green Bay is good enough to not just sneak into the playoffs, but win a playoff game also? This is a really talented team. They're really young also. They got a good offensive line. They got a phenomenal defense from a talent standpoint. Everything seems to be coming full circle for Green Bay. The word of the day is outrage. And there was a lot of it when the College Football Playoff Committee released the final rankings. And they put in Alabama over Florida State for the last spot. And a lot of people were really pissed off about it. And look, the injury to Jordan Travis is absolutely devastating. But there's no way you can say that FSU is one of the best four teams without him playing. Did you not see the random quarterback that they had playing against Louisville in the ACC championship? He was awful. The only time Florida State had some offense in that game is when they went into that Wildcat set with that running back. That was the only way they could move the football. And yes, the playoffs isn't all about having the most entertaining matchups. But the committee this year had a pretty clear-cut criteria of what they were looking for. They were looking for the best four teams. They didn't give a damn about who deserved to be in there. Like, I was listening to the selection show, right? And I was listening to Booger McFarland cry about, these kids, you know, you're doing them a disservice because they put their blood, sweat, and tears on the field and you're robbing them of something that they worked so hard for. You can say the same thing about Alabama. Miss me with this whole Florida State deserved to be in. So did Alabama, people. Alabama's two best wins against Ole Miss and Georgia, the number one ranked team in college football, who they just beat in the SEC championship, are more impressive than any other wins that Florida State has had this year. Look, I get that Alabama almost lost to Auburn. But Texas almost lost to Houston and Kansas State. Washington almost lost to Arizona State, one of the worst Power 5 teams in college football this past season. They almost lost to Washington State as well in the Apple Cup. Not every single team is going to go through their season when they're dominating everybody and they're not going to have any close games against teams that they're expected to blow out. That's just college football. You can't knock Alabama for barely beating Auburn and then knocking off the number one team in college football and ending their 29-game win streak. If Florida State was to play Alabama's schedule this year, they wouldn't be undefeated. The ACC is not that tough. Just because you're unbeaten doesn't mean that you're automatically qualified for a spot in the playoffs. And just because you feel like you deserve to be in the playoffs doesn't mean that you deserve a spot in it. Everybody feels like they deserve to be in the playoffs. Did you not listen to Kirby Smart after the SEC championship game? I mean, miss me with the whole, oh, well, Jordan Travis injury, you know, that shouldn't determine the whole outcome of the whole entire season. It shouldn't. But at the end of the day, without Jordan Travis, you're a worse team without him. And without him, you're not one of the best four teams in college football. This has nothing to do with SEC bias. Regardless if Alabama would have lost to Georgia, you still weren't going to get in because you know what would have happened? Georgia would have got in and Texas would have gotten in that four over you. It doesn't matter what kind of scenarios you wanted to cook up. You were never going to get in because once Jordan Travis got injured, the committee never saw you as one of the top four teams in the nation. And the thing with Alabama is that, yeah, they may get the benefit of a doubt more times than not because they play in the SEC. But let's not make it seem like the SEC is overrated. People keep throwing out, well, the SEC was 4-6 against other Power 5 schools and Texas beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Okay, cool, but tell me who has won the last couple of national championships? Since 2010, the SEC has dominated when it comes to winning national championships. And Alabama in the playoffs is everybody's biggest fear. They're playing their best football right now. There's no way you can look at anybody on that committee and say that FSU was a better team than Alabama and they deserve to be in over Alabama based on what? Because they went 13-0 in the ACC. Okay, cool. Oh, well, JT, you're saying that the regular season doesn't matter? I'm not saying that the regular season doesn't matter. All I'm saying is that your record doesn't always define what you are as a team. Going 13-0 in that ACC is cool, but it's not the same equivalent to going 13-0 in the SEC or going 12-1 in the SEC like what Alabama did. If you put FSU in the SEC this season, they don't go undefeated. Now, I'm not saying they would be terrible, but all I'm saying is that you're not always what your record says you are. Alabama had the fifth strongest schedule in the nation this season. FSU was 55th. Alabama beat the number one team in college football. People seem to overlook that. You mean to tell me that you thought Florida State would have been able to compete with Georgia with that random quarterback that they had out there against Louisville? Absolutely not. The committee got this right. I know it hurts if you're a Florida State fan. And you know, if you're Mike Norvell and you are somebody who's on Florida State's team or staff, you're going to feel pissed off about this, and you should be. But somebody was going to get screwed. It just happened to be FSU, and I knew it was going to happen because there's no way that the committee was going to allow a SEC champion with one loss to miss out on the playoffs. You can call it bias all you want to, but this is the toughest conference in college football, people. College football runs through the South. We got to stop making it seem like, oh, well, since they're undefeated, they deserve to be in. Alabama deserves to be in, too. When you knock off the best team in college football, when you're able to beat Ole Miss, you deserve to be in. These are resume builders, and Florida State's resume wasn't good enough, especially when you look at how they played without Jordan Travis. Well, Ohio State, you know, they won it all with Cardale Jones. Cardale Jones didn't look like shit in his conference championship game. When Cardale Jones took over at the helm for Ohio State years ago when JT Barrett got injured, do you know what they did against Wisconsin? They smacked them. They put a 50 burger on them. They beat Alabama. Like, they went all the way with Cardale Jones at quarterback. This dude was fantastic. And the committee kind of felt the same way about Ohio State like they did with FSU. But the only difference is that their backup quarterback situation made the committee change their tone that season back in 2014. And Cardale Jones looked like good enough to be a starter anywhere else. You really think that Tate Rodemaker would have been good enough for FSU to be in a competitive game with Michigan, Washington, or even Texas? Like, people keep trying to make this seem like this was just a cash grab. No, it wasn't. Florida State, yes, you're 13-0, but just because you're 13-0 doesn't mean that you're locked to get in. And I was listening to, I believe his name is Joey Galloway, once Booger McFarland got done crying, he said something that I really agree with. The college football playoffs never had a written rule that says the most deserving teams have to be in. It never was about picking the most deserving teams. This thing has always been about picking the best four teams in college football. And you really think that FSU fits that description of the best four teams in college football? If you do, you're delusional. You're smoking some good you know what. And you might need to pass me some. Look, I'm not an FSU hater. I wanted to see FSU in the playoffs. But if we are trying to put the four best teams in college football into the postseason, FSU doesn't fit that description without Jordan Travis. It hurts. I get that. You have a right to feel frustrated. You have a right to be upset. Hell, I was upset. But at the end of the day, I understood where the committee was coming from. Y'all making it seem like it's this big outrage that Alabama got in over FSU, man. This is a crime. This is a travesty. They almost lost to Auburn, who almost lost to New Mexico State. Who gives a damn if Auburn almost beat Alabama? Nearly every team in the playoffs had a mishap. That's just college football. We got to stop with the copium. We got to. There's no way you can tell me that Alabama, who played the fifth toughest schedule in college football this year, who beat Ole Miss, who beat the number one team in college football in Georgia, didn't deserve to be in over Florida State. They both deserve to be in. Somebody was going to get screwed. It just happened to be Florida State because they didn't have Jordan Travis. It hurts. I understand that. But at the end of the day, the committee gave a clear-cut criteria what they were looking for. They were looking for the best four teams. It doesn't matter about what has transpired in the past. The committee changes every single year. The same committee that was there that allowed Cincinnati to get in, that allowed Notre Dame to get in, they're not there anymore. So, of course, when you have new faces on the committee and it changes every single year, everybody's going to have different ways that they evaluate teams. And the number one thing that they've been kind of consistent with, even though they do have a lot of hypocrisy and a lot of inconsistencies, is that they are judging teams based on resume and the eye test. And did Florida State pass the eye test, barely surviving Louisville? No, they did not. They barely beat Florida. Florida's 5-7. Alabama's win against Tennessee is better than any other win that Florida State has this year outside of them beating LSU, and Alabama beat them too. I am not outraged about Alabama getting in that four. Florida State, you can say they deserve to be in, but Alabama deserved to be in more. Their only loss came to Texas.
Oh, well, JT, like, so you're telling me being an undefeated Power 5 champion means nothing?
I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that your record is subjective. Just because you're 13-0 in the ACC doesn't mean that it equates to the same weight of being a 12-1 SEC champion. Like, we're not saying the regular season doesn't matter, but what we are saying is that your strength of schedule does. And you going 13-0 in the ACC is not more impressive than Alabama beating Ole Miss, beating Tennessee, and knocking off Georgia in the SEC championship. I'm sorry. Blame your conference. Blame your conference teams like Miami for not living up to the level of talent that they have on that team. Clemson had a down season. Florida State's best wins were against LSU, Clemson, and Duke, and Louisville. That's about it. Outside of that LSU win, none of those wins are even remotely as impressive as Alabama beating Ole Miss or knocking off number one Georgia. And I know you Florida State fans understand where I'm coming from. It's just that you don't want to understand because you feel slighted. You feel like you were done an injustice. And you were. But it's not crazy. It's not outrageous for Alabama to be in over you just because you were undefeated. Being 13-0 in the ACC doesn't equate to being a 12-1 SEC champion.
Oh, JT, so you're saying the SEC is the only conference that matters?
I'm not saying that. All I'm telling you is that you played in a weak conference, so you weren't able to have the same strength of schedule that Alabama had. You see, Alabama doesn't have the schedule of Texas. They can afford to schedule jabronis to start the season out, because the SEC is just so tough, because the conference is so deep that you're always going to run into a couple of highly ranked teams that can build up your resume. Same thing with Georgia. People try to knock Georgia's strength of schedule like they didn't play against Missouri, who is playing in the New Year's Six bowl game, and Ole Miss, and Tennessee, who's ranked inside the top 25, or was at one point. So, like, let's just knock it off with this whole nonsense about the SEC bias. The fix is in. The fix wasn't in. Jordan Travis got injured. And when you don't have Jordan Travis, your star quarterback, the most important position on the football team, you're not going to be the same team without him. I'm sorry. I mean, like, yes, FSU probably should have been in. You get what I'm saying? But if Jordan Travis was injured, you would have been in. But he wasn't. And you threw out that random quarterback in Brock Glenn, and he looked terrible. And you didn't pass the eye test. You didn't have any convincing wins in your last two games without Jordan and Travis. If you would have dominated Florida, if you would have dominated Louisville, you would have been in. But you weren't. And you didn't prove to the committee that you were one of the best four teams. If you haven't already, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. I know a lot of people are really upset right now. My guy Christian Bright said weenie take. I mean, at the end of the day, what more can you say about Florida State not getting in? Like, who cares about them being more deserving? It's never been about who deserves to be in. Somebody tried to say, well, the Steelers just lost their playoffs, just lost their starting quarterback. Does that mean that they should be disqualified from making it to the playoffs? Bruh, the NFL and college football are two separate entities. In the NFL, you pretty much have auto bids. You win your division, you get in. You don't win your division, you got a shot at getting another chance at getting in by having a good record. The college football playoffs doesn't have any auto bids. That's a problem with the 14 playoffs. That's why we're going to 12 next year. So next season, if Florida State gets into this same situation, they don't have to be worried about getting screwed over, because you're going to have 12 teams. But even with 12 teams, nobody's going to get satisfied. Somebody's always going to get screwed over. But when it comes to picking the four best teams, Florida State didn't fit that description. Leave a like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Remember that every episode of the podcast is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. Now let's dive into another topic. The 49ers clobbered the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, after they went 3-and-out on their first two offensive possessions, Kyle Shanahan pulled the whole entire team on the sidelines and he said, okay, y'all boys ready? Y'all know what time it is? It's clobbering time. And after that, the 49ers went on to score touchdowns on six straight offensive possessions. Philadelphia, you knew eventually they were just going to get worn out. This was a team that was in a tough battle with the Buffalo Bills not too long ago. They had a really great game against Kansas City on Monday Night Football. Eventually, they were going to have to lose. And they went into a game against the 49ers where the 49ers were more fresh. And they just flatly looked like the better team in this game. And the Philadelphia Eagles, despite them having the best record in the NFL, this is a team that doesn't really play their best football until the fourth quarter. But when you're going against a team like San Francisco that has just as talented as a roster as you do, you can't afford to get out to a slow start. You know, the 49ers, they went 3-and-out their first two drives, and after that, Brock Purdy woke up. This offense woke up. That defense woke up, and it was a struggle for Philadelphia. And, you know, for the 49ers, you look at how well their defense played in this game. I mean, there was a stretch during this game when the Philadelphia Eagles, they just looked out of sorts on offense. Everything that Philadelphia tried to do just seemed like it wasn't working. And meanwhile, for San Francisco, Brock Purdy, this dude looked like a front runner for MVP with how he played in this game. Philly's defense isn't as good as what it was last year. Hell, it's nowhere as good as what it was last year. Darius Slay was getting cooked. James Bradbury, he hasn't looked that good all season. And this secondary got toasted. And not just was this secondary getting toasted, but they also were missing tackles. Deebo Samuel had a big touchdown run in the second half when he broke one tackle and then he just burnt the rest of the Eagles' defense. You know, the Philadelphia Eagles, to me, are still one of the best teams in the NFL. And I still, if I had to bet money on a team to make it out of the NFC, I still would put my money on Philadelphia. But they just looked like they weren't ready to play in this game. And this game got really tense. You know, you had one of the 49ers linebackers, Dre Greenlaw, who body slammed Devontae Smith, pretty much gave him a belly-to-belly suplex on the sideline. Then he got into it with the Philadelphia Eagles head of security. Then he gets ejected. Then the Eagles head of security gets ejected. It's like we were watching a damn WWE match out there. It was damn near a scrap after every single play. And the 49ers were just giving it to Philadelphia, giving it to those boys long and hard. Look, like, the 49ers, when they're playing their best football, this is arguably the best team in the NFL. At the end of the day, though, Philadelphia in this game, they just got worn out over the course of this matchup. The run game for the 49ers was really starting to hit home against this Eagles defensive line, and the defensive line of Philadelphia has been the strength of this defense all year long. But once that offense started to get a little bit worn out and they weren't able to sustain drives and that defense was on the field for more plays than what they should have been, there was really no way they could find a way to get off the field. And that's when the 49ers really started to take advantage. You see, I picked San Francisco to win this game, but I didn't expect this to be a damn blowout. I thought that this was going to be a competitive game. I'm pretty sure most of us did. And the fact that the 49ers destroy Philadelphia this way on the road is even more impressive. Now, I'm still taking Philadelphia to make it out of the NFC. But, you know, this game kind of gave me a reality check that the Philadelphia Eagles, they're not just the overwhelmingly best team in this conference. There are other teams that are just as good as them. And with the 49ers beating the Philadelphia Eagles in this way, it now puts the Eagles in a must-win situation next week when they got to play the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night, because if they lose that game, Dallas could potentially take control of the one seed. And the one seed now is pretty much up for grabs. San Francisco could win it. Detroit could win it. It's wide open. And if Philadelphia doesn't get that first-round bye, that's really going to be a major disadvantage to them in terms of them being able to make it back to the Super Bowl, because Jalen Hurts has been banged up for the majority of this season. You know, they've dealt with a lot of injuries. They're depleted at linebacker. It just came out before I started going live that said that Darius Leonard is either going to sign with the Cowboys or the Eagles. The Eagles desperately need him because they need help at linebacker. Their linebacker unit got shredded by the 49ers. The 49ers just flat out look like the better team today. Now, if the Philadelphia Eagles go up against the 49ers again in the postseason, I doubt that we get the same result. Not saying that the Eagles are a lock to win, but I doubt that the 49ers are going to clobber Philly like how they did tonight. Like, I don't know what the hell got into the 49ers on their third possession of this game, but it just seemed like their first two drives, they were just trying to test out Philadelphia. They were just trying to get a sense. They were trying to fill Philadelphia out. And once they got a good sense of what Philadelphia was trying to do defensively, they went on the offensive, and boy, it got ugly. And it got ugly really quick. Going into halftime, I was thinking that Philadelphia was going to be able to climb back into this game like how they've been able to do all season long, but the 49ers just kept their foots on Philadelphia's neck. And there was a moment during this game when Jalen Hurts left, Mariota came in, and then Jalen Hurts came back, but it didn't really matter. At that point, you might as well have just kept Jalen Hurts on the sidelines because the game was already out of reach. Not to mention the 49ers had a lot of added motivation coming into this game. Last year, they truly believed that if Brock Purdy wasn't injured, they would have beat Philadelphia in the NFC Championship. And you look at the result of this game, you know, you kind of got to wonder if Brock Purdy truly was healthy for that whole entire game, if they would have pulled it off. This defense doesn't look remotely as good as what it was last year. Like, Darius Slay, he looks old. He looks washed. And he's had a pretty solid season, but nothing to the level of what he was doing last season. He was a shutdown corner last year. They were running whoever offense on Darius Slay. Brandon Ayuk was tearing that man up. And then you got Jalen Carter crying after the game and people coming after him for crying. It's like, bro, the dude can't show a little bit of emotion. He wants to win. He's passionate about this shit. Like, dude, emotions were flying high in this game. You want to know why? Because this just wasn't a regular season game. This game had a playoff atmosphere to it. You want to know why? Because the one seed is at stake. You got two of the top teams in the conference battling it out. And with this loss now, it puts Philadelphia in a situation where if they lose to Dallas next week, the NFC is pretty much wide open in terms of who can get that one seed. That one seed is so important because you only get one spot, and that one team who gets that one seed has home field advantages throughout the playoffs, and they don't have to play in the first round. Philadelphia, I really feel out of all the teams that are in contention for the one seed, they need it the most because they're the most banged up. They need Jalen Hurts to get an additional week to heal up. They need an additional week to recoup from their injuries on the defense side of the football. You know, for the 49ers, man, like, they really laid it on these boys today. And I still love Philadelphia to make it out of this conference, but the 49ers are making a really strong case for me to change my opinion on the matter. But the 49ers, they destroyed the Philadelphia Eagles 42-19. Let me know your thoughts on this game down in the comment section down below. The Houston Texans snapped the Denver Broncos 5-game win streak. Normally, the story of the Texans season and them being able to win games has been C.J. Stroud having incredible performances. And he played really well in this game, but the defense really is the biggest takeaway from Houston being able to pull off this win. They forced 3 interceptions on Russell Wilson. Derek Stingley had 2 of them, and Jimmy Ward had the game-sealing one. Houston's offensive line got absolutely destroyed by Denver's defensive line. C.J. Stroud was running for his life all game long. But even despite this offensive line getting beat up, C.J. Stroud still played an excellent game. And this is with Tank Dell getting injured. When Tank Dell got injured, I felt like my heart got ripped out of my body. I don't even know why the hell the Texans would have him in on a goal line situation when he's small as hell. The dude is only, what, 5'8", 5'9", 165 pounds? Why the hell is he out there blocking on the goal line? Now, I know that size doesn't always determine how likely a player is to get injured, but damn, it's like it would have made more sense to put a bigger wide receiver out in that situation. And when Tank Dell went down, you would have thought that that would have been a huge blow to the Houston Texans offense. But they had another wide receiver that was stepping up, making plays, and Nico Collins. He went for 191 receiving yards, and he also caught a touchdown as well. The Houston Texans are the best young team in the NFL. They got a lot of young players on this roster that are able to come in and make plays, and they know their roles. And also, something that you can take away from watching this game is that this team really has embraced C.J. Stroud. There was a moment when one of the Broncos linebackers had gave C.J. Stroud a little bit of a shove, and C.J. Stroud got a ball in his face, and the rest of the offensive line came in and was like, hey, boy, you better watch yourself putting your hands on quarterback before we teach you something. You know, I like that about Houston. And you look at D'Amico Ryans. You know, I was listening to Colin Cowherd earlier when he was giving his thoughts on this game. He said that D'Amico Ryans, he isn't a yeller. He isn't a screamer. He isn't snapping on players. He's cool, calm, and collected. And one thing about it is that he finds a way to get the most out of these young players. I mean, when Derek Stingley caught that second interception, I mean, D'Amico Ryans was so freaking happy. Every time I see D'Amico Ryans on the sidelines, he always has a happy demeanor. He isn't one of these coaches like Bill Belichick that always looks angry, always looks mad, and that resonates with the players. And that's why this young team is exceeding everybody's expectations. You look at the Denver Broncos, this offense was all out of sorts. And looking at Denver's final offensive play of this game, it pretty much was a big, you know, factor and determining how this game went, because this offense overall just looked out of sorts. So on the final play, it looked like the receivers and the tight end didn't even know what route to run. Like, Russell Wilson just had to improvise, and he just had to throw it up. And I don't think that Russell Wilson, you can put this loss entirely on him. I mean, one of those interceptions was tipped. It wasn't all his fault. This offensive line didn't really do him no favors. Hell, he had to throw that football as soon as he got the snap. You look at Denver's defense, they did all they could to keep them in this game. But when you got Russell Wilson, who throws that big interception to Derek Stingley, which gives Houston a short field, what do you want the defense to do? The Denver Broncos, I had this as a fringe playoff team. I had them at around 9 to 10 wins. And I was a little bit shocked that they lost this game to Houston. Even though I picked Houston to win, I kind of almost changed my decision because I was like, you know, like Denver's hot. They got a veteran head coach. You got a veteran quarterback. And you got a young quarterback with a pretty young team. And with young teams, they end up being pretty inconsistent. But the Texans have been pretty consistent for the most part this season. They haven't had too many surprising losses outside of when they got upset by Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. That's been about it. This has been a consistent football team, and normally with young teams, they end up being really inconsistent. They end up being really up and down, hot and cold. You haven't seen that out of Houston this year. Now, they are on the outside looking in of the playoff race right now, but I still believe that they're going to get in when you look at how easy their schedule is to close out. Like, their next game, you got to play up against, what, the Tennessee Titans? The Titans, they're going to be a formidable team. They're not a team that you can just, you know, draw up a W for. They are a team that's going to fight. That game probably is going to be a little bit close. You got to play the New York Jets. They don't have an offense. They got a great defense. But with them not having a great offense, you should be able to win that game. You got to go up against the Cleveland Browns. Then you play the Titans again. Then you got to play the Colts. That Colts game at the end of the season, that could probably be the game that determines if Houston makes it into the playoffs or not, because the Colts right now, they're in control of that 7 seed. So maybe that showdown between Indy and Houston determines who gets that final playoff spot in the AFC. But the Texans take down the Denver Broncos 22-17. We got Alabama versus Michigan in the first semifinal matchup in the Rose Bowl. This game is really intriguing to me, because when Michigan found out that they was going up against Alabama, they didn't have a pleasant reaction. As a matter of fact, there was a sense of worrisome that you could get from that room. And you definitely should be worried when you're going against the Alabama Crimson Tide. Because Alabama, they're the scariest team out of any team that's in the playoffs, because they're playing their best football. They outplayed Georgia. Jalen Milroe, this dude has gotten better every single game. And I wonder how Michigan's defense is going to prepare for Jalen Milroe, because Michigan hasn't faced a quarterback with Jalen Milroe's skill set. You look at Michigan, though, their defense is really good. And I question how much success is Alabama going to be able to have against this Michigan front. Georgia's defense is good, but it's not at the level that it was in the past two seasons. As a matter of fact, I would say that Michigan's defense is way better than Georgia's, because they got so much talent up front, and they also got a really good secondary. But do they have the kind of skill at linebacker where you can put guys who can spy on Jalen Milroe and can keep him contained in the pocket? Are they going to be able to keep Jalen Milroe from going off on those design quarterback runs like what he was killing Georgia with? Now, Alabama defensively, they got a really good run defense. They're 29th in college football rushing yards per game allowed. But we've seen during certain games that Alabama has played where this defense has been susceptible to the run. And we know that Michigan, they're a run-first team. But they also play really good complementary football. They do a really good job at being balanced. There has yet to be a team that's been able to force Michigan to become a pass-first team. Michigan is only a 1.5-point favorite in this game. I expect this point spread to go down within the next couple of weeks as we get closer to this matchup. But right now, I do think that this game favors Michigan. The reason why I have to say this game favors Michigan is because Alabama, they still have inconsistencies in the passing game. And it really comes down to that offensive line. That offensive line hasn't really been that reliable when it comes to pass protection. And Jalen Milroe last week, he had a really good game against Georgia, but he started that game out really ugly. And he's not one of those quarterbacks that's going to wow you where he's going to go 28 of 32 passing for 400 passing yards and 3 touchdowns and no picks. He's one of those quarterbacks that's just an okay passer. It's funny how he throws the deep ball better than he throws the short and intermediate passes. The thing with Jalen Milroe is being able to keep him inside the pocket and force him to be a true quarterback from throwing within inside the pocket, not allowing him to get outside and create with his legs and extend plays. That's when Jalen Milroe can really hurt you. Michigan on the other end, with how good their defensive line is and how good their pass rush is, they should be able to take advantage of an Alabama offensive line that's been fairly inconsistent. But you can never count out Nick Saban. You can never count out Alabama. I know that sounds so cliche to say, but it's true. You know, I don't think too many people thought that Alabama was going to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. Hell, I didn't see it coming. Jalen Milroe, I thought that he wasn't good enough to beat Georgia with the fact that he's not a great passer, and he still didn't show the ability to be a great passer in that game. You know, a lot of his great plays came when he was getting outside the pocket and extending and buying time for guys to get open. And he made a lot of big plays with his legs in that game. If Michigan can erase Jalen Milroe's ability to kill them in the run game and you force him to become a pocket passer, and he has to beat you with his arm, this game votes Michigan's way. You see, Michigan, I think that they're a way more versatile team than what Alabama is. You see, Michigan, they may not be as deep as what Alabama is at the receiver position, even though the receiver position hasn't really been that great for Alabama this year. I don't view Michigan as a team that's going to destroy you by just airing the football out. When Michigan is at their best, they're able to mix in the run with the pass. They can get the play-action passing game going. But I do like the fact that I trust Michigan's offense more simply for the fact that J.J. McCarthy has proven to be a way more efficient passer than what Jalen Milroe is. And if Michigan gets into a situation where the run game isn't at their disposal, and this becomes a game that they have to win throwing the football, I still like their chances, even against a really good Alabama defense that was able to slow down Carson Beck. Georgia wasn't fully healthy at wide receiver. Michigan, they have a pretty talented group of wide receivers. Now, it's not as good as Washington or Texas, but it's good enough to get the job done. This is an Alabama secondary that, at times, they've been vulnerable to giving up big plays. Against Tennessee, they gave up a couple of big plays deep down the field. And if Michigan can get their run game going and they can allow that to open up their pass game and they can get the play action pass going, then that votes well for them. Alabama, I feel they're a one-trick pony. They're not a team that wants to have to beat you by throwing the football 40 times with Jalen Milroe. Go back and look at how that Texas game went. When Texas was able to slow down that run game and Jalen Milroe wasn't able to display how great of an athlete he was and they kept him inside of the pocket, that was a completely different game for Alabama's offense. And we've yet to see a team that really has been able to contain Jalen Milroe. Georgia, they tried, but on those zone reads and those read options, Jalen Milroe was killing them. If Michigan can find a way to keep Jalen Milroe from taking over this game with his legs, I feel really confident about their ability to pull off this win. Now, Alabama has a really great defensive line. They got a really talented pass rush. You got Dallas Turner, who probably is going to be a top 15 selection in the 2024 NFL draft. When you look at Michigan's offensive tackles, you know, I kind of think that's a weak spot on their offensive line. When they went up against Penn State, Chop Robinson was having a really good day against whoever that right tackle was. And they lost one of their starting offensive tackles in their win against Ohio State. And you wonder how that's going to play a factor into how their pass protection is going to be able to handle this Alabama pass rush. But I'm really excited for this Alabama versus Michigan game. I do think that when you look at Michigan right now, I'll say they're a better team than Alabama. But the best team doesn't always win. You know, how is the coaching going to factor into this game? Because last year, Michigan was a better team than TCU. But they lost that game because they got outcoached. They didn't really look as prepared as what TCU's coaching staff was. We got Texas versus Washington in the Sugar Bowl. And this is the game that I'm the most excited to watch because you look at Texas, they are the most complete team in the playoffs this year. They got a great defense. They got a great offense. And unlike Michigan and Alabama, they can beat you any kind of way. They can beat you with the ground and pound. They can beat you airing the football out. And with how great their defense is, they're really good at taking away the run game. And they don't really give up a lot of big plays in the passing game. This is a truly complete team. You look at Washington, they're a team that offensively, they can throw the football at will against anybody they play up against because they got three NFL caliber wide receivers. We saw what Polk and the Dunes they were doing to Oregon secondary. And you look at how good their offensive line is as well. I think that Washington's offensive line is really underrated. And Washington, I think a misconception about Washington is that they can't run the football. When you look at their rushing numbers statistically, not really that great. But it's not that they can't run the football. It's just that they don't need to run the football. But when they want to run the football, they can. But against the Texas defense, are they going to be able to have the luxury of being able to do that? And another thing that I've noticed about Washington is that, you know, in the Pac-12 championship game, they got out to a fast start. That's one of the few games that I've seen Washington play this season when they came out the gates guns blazing. Normally when Washington plays, they are a team that gets better as the game goes on. Michael Penix, he was hot to start off that Pac-12 title. But in other games, such as Oregon State, he started off hella slow. You can't afford to get out to a slow start against this Texas team. They're way too good for you to be able to come from behind. You got to be able to keep pace with this team. Texas, in my opinion, it's the most deepest team out of any team in the playoffs this year. They're so loaded at wide receiver. You got A.D. Mitchell, Isaiah Neyor. Now, their best receiver in Xavier Worthy, he got injured in the Big 12 championship, so we don't really know what his status is going to be for this game. But even if he isn't able to play, I don't really think it's a huge loss because how talented and deep they are at that receiver position. They're also deep at running back. They lost their RB1. And they still have success running the football against Oklahoma State. Washington's defense has played really well over the last couple of weeks, especially when you look at how well they performed against Oregon. But against Texas, though, they got a great offensive line. You're also going to get great quarterback play out of Quinn Ewers. But the same issue that I have with Michael Penix, I kind of have with Quinn Ewers. At times, he can start games out a little bit slow, and he can be a streaky player. And that's kind of when Texas has gotten themselves into holes, when Quinn Ewers has been streaky. He's had some turnover problems at times. But when he's playing his best football, this is a tough offense to stop. And Steve Sarkisian is one of the best play callers in college football. But Washington, their offensive coordinator, is also a really good play caller as well. And offensively, both of these teams, to me, look like they're evenly matched. Outside of the fact that maybe Texas is way better running the football than what Washington is. They both are really talented at wide receiver. They got really talented quarterbacks and really good play callers. Defensively, Texas has the advantage. But is this Texas defense going to be able to slow down this Washington passing attack? The only time Washington has been slowed down throwing the football has been when they've gotten out the slow starts. Rather that be them coming out a little bit slow, not being dialed in completely, or if it be the weather conditions. But in a game like this, you start out slow against Texas, you could find yourself in a 21-7 hole and having a hard time crawling your way out of it. Even though Washington's defense has played really well, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up that same level of play against a team like Texas. They really are going to need their offense to be able to go point for point with Texas. This is one of those games that could be a shootout. You remember a while back when we got that Oklahoma-Georgia semifinal matchup and Oklahoma got out big and then Georgia came from behind and won that game with Jake Fromm? This game could probably go the same way that game went. But if you were to ask me who's a team that has the smallest margin for error, I got to go with Washington. Texas is just a more complete team. Their defense is really solid top to bottom. Washington, their defensive line played really well against Oregon, and it surprised a lot of people. but they don't have insane talent on the defensive line. They got a few NFL guys on that defensive line, but compared to Texas, they got a lot of guys on that front seven who are probably going to be playing on Sunday. Meanwhile, you look at Washington, they may have two or three. So I think for Washington, it's really important that they can get out to a fast start, like how they did against Oregon, the Pac-12 championship, because Texas is one of the last teams that you want to face off where you have to come from behind against them. Because when this team is on, they're on. A lot of people may not have paid attention to this, but USC has a new defensive coordinator, and his name is De'Anton Lynn. And that name may sound familiar to you because he was the defensive coordinator for UCLA. So USC pretty much stole this dude from their rival, and I think he's going to be a big reason why they end up getting back into the playoff conversation in 2024 going into the Big Ten Conference. Some people were telling me that despite the fact that De'Anton Lynn is a really good defensive coordinator, it's not going to be much because Lincoln Riley is the problem. Lincoln Riley is not the problem with the defense per se. The problem really was the dude that he hired. You can say that it may be a mentality thing with why this defense has underperformed. Maybe Lincoln Riley doesn't put enough emphasis on physicality in practice. But one thing about De'Anton Lynn is that he's going to be able to get the most out of this defense. And with his personality, the players on this roster should be able to gravitate towards him. And his dad, Anthony Lynn, was the former head coach of the LA Chargers. So he comes from an NFL pedigree. This is somebody that's a really good communicator, and he transformed that Bruins defense from being 88th and, you know, points per game and yards per game allowed last season into one of the better defenses in college football. UCLA this season, they were 18th in points per game allowed. They were 12th in yards per game allowed. They were really good getting off the field in third down situations. They were third against the run, and they were 12th in the nation in takeaways. USC, this defense couldn't stop a nosebleed at times. So even though you may think that Lincoln Riley is the problem, I doubt that this defense isn't going to be able to improve under De'Anton Lynn. De'Anton Lynn, I'm pretty sure Lincoln Riley is going to allow him to come in and do whatever he needs to do to have this defense playing at a championship level. Because when you're entering the Big Ten Conference, you got to be tough up front. And that's something that De'Anton Lynn really preaches. The strength of UCLA's defense was their pass rush. Number 15, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but he's probably going to be a first-round draft pick in next year's draft. UCLA had one of the best pass rushes, not just in the Pac-12, but in all of college football. USC needs more of that. They need somebody who can get the most out of the defensive line. When you're going to the Big Ten and you got to go up against Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, those are really physical football teams. You can't have a finesse mindset when you're going up against them. You got to be able to hone your own up front in the trenches. And that's been the biggest downfall of Lincoln Riley coached teams in the past. The defensive line play wasn't the best at Oklahoma when he was coaching there. And it hasn't really been that good for USC, despite them having a good amount of talent on that side of the ball. Their defensive line was good enough that I felt their pass rush should have been a lot better. You have Bear Alexander. That dude is good enough to be a first-round pick if he decides to leave for the draft. So the fact that USC's pass rush has underperformed the last couple of years, De'Anton Lynn is going to be able to come in and clean that up. You're also going to have way better trench play, and you're going to be way better against the run, and you're going to need that to be able to have success in the Big Ten Conference. I think that De'Anton Lynn was the perfect hire for USC, and this was the dude who I was saying that USC needed to go after all along. And when you listen to Chip Kelly talk about De'Anton Lynn deciding to leave for USC, he sounds really hurt about it. And it sounded like they tried to do all they could to keep him around. They just couldn't match the money that USC had to pay him. And USC is paying this dude a lot of money to fix this defense. So you better believe that this isn't going to be one of those situations where he's going to have the luxury of this defense not being great year one under him. USC, they're expecting this defense to be great right away. And Lincoln Riley has a lot of pressure on him next year. And I think that this offense for USC isn't going to miss a beat at all, despite losing Caleb Williams. But this defense, they're the biggest question. And you address the biggest question by going ahead and getting one of the more touted defensive coordinators out there. USC wasn't the only program that wanted this dude. There were a lot of big-name programs who were going after this dude as well. The way Chip Kelly describes it, it came down to a bidding war pretty much. De'Aaron Lynn is the biggest piece of the puzzle for USC getting back in the playoff conversation, because there were really high playoff, you know, expectations placed on this program coming into this season, and they weren't able to live up to that. And it wasn't because of the offense. It was mainly because the defense couldn't get big stops when it mattered the most. Against Washington, they couldn't get a stop. Against Utah, Caleb Williams gets a touchdown to put USC in the lead, and then they allowed the pig farmer to get the Utes in the field goal range and ultimately win that game. There's been 2-3 games that USC has lost just based off defense alone. Bringing in De'Aaron Lynn, I'm expecting this guy to change this defense and have an immediate impact with this program. I don't think this is going to be a 2-3-year thing that's going to take a while to get going. I believe that this is one of these defensive coordinators that you hire, you bring in right away, and your defense drastically has an overhaul in performance. And with what he did at UCLA, he's going to be able to replicate that at USC due to the fact that he's going to have more access to more talent. UCLA's defense was talented, but the back end of their secondary, I don't really know about. And the fact that he was able to change that defense from being what it was, arguably the worst defense in the Pac-12, to one of the best in only the span of 1 year, gives me a lot of confidence that he's going to have this USC defense playing at a really high level in 2024, and they're going to need it. Because when you're playing in this conference, you're not going to be able to just outscore everybody. Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State all have really great defenses. You're going to have to be able to get a couple of key stops to win you some of these big conference games that you're going to be going up against next season. So De'Aaron Lynn was a really massive hire for USC. Not a lot of people were talking about it because it got overshadowed due to conference championship weekend. But I really believe that this De'Aaron Lynn dude is going to be able to do wonders with this USC defense. And I expect him to be a big reason why the Trojans get back into the playoff conversation in 2024. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the podcast is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms: Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from. You can find the JT Sports Podcast. And I will see you guys tomorrow with another episode of JT Sports Live.